Welcome back to Between the Bar Lines. I'm your host, Dr. Maeve Berry. Today, we are going to speak about England in the 19th century. And as you may have noticed, we really haven't spoken too much about this country in our episodes since maybe the Renaissance era. And I think that is especially poignant in today's episode because we can finally understand why that is. It took a while, but eventually England was able to find its own national voice, much like the other countries that we've spoken about at the end of the 19th century. Today's topic is the topic of the English musical Renaissance. So, say you were an English music lover in the mid-1800s. You might have felt a bit like nothing was happening. Germany had Bach, Beethoven, Brahms up until this point. France had Berlioz, and later we'll learn that they had Debussy. And Italy just had centuries of opera. And England, well, England, I guess you could say, had Handel in the Baroque period, but he was German. So, truly, after the death of Purcell in 1695, English-born composers didn't really gain that same national prestige as the Europeans did. So, music certainly existed during this time, but it wasn't considered like a national leader in composition like Europeans and Russian composers were. But that began to change at the end of the 19th century. So this English musical quote-unquote Renaissance did not happen by accident. Just like any transformation in music, this happened intentionally and organically through a few major developments in this repertoire. So we had new musical institutions. This is a huge part of this century. So the foundation of the Royal College in 1882, and also the Royal Academy of Music, provided this structured training that British musicians could now have. Before this, many composers had to go abroad for this type of musical education. So suddenly, Britain had this system for producing its own composers instead of importing them. We also, like many other European countries, had this growing middle-class audience. So industrialization is totally to blame for this. Blame is not the right word, but for this expansion of this middle-class audience, concerts became more common and more accessible. And because of that, especially in Britain, choral societies flourished across the country. So it was a national pastime that people were singing in these choral societies, and that's how they were coming together to make and hear music. In England, we also had a revival of folk music and Tudor music. So they started to rediscover their own heritage, basically. So there were Renaissance madrigals, folk songs, and early church music. And this was the thing that was inspiring new works that felt very British and not imitative of any other European models. There are a few major composers in this time that helped with this resurgence of the English national voice. Sir Hubert Parry is often seen as the person who was leading this. He wrote these grand choral works and symphonies, but he is most remembered for Jerusalem. Our next composer is Sir Charles Villiers Stanford. And he was actually an Irish-born composer who became a titan of British music education. His symphonies and liturgical works were deeply influential, but his impact as a teacher was greater. He taught future composers and stars like Ralph Vaughan Williams and Gustav Holst. I also enjoy a lot of C.V. Stanford's motets, specifically the three Latin motets, Opus 38, with Iustorum Anime and Beate Quorum Via. These are like the quintessential C.B. Stanford choral excerpts that you sing. We also have Edward Elgar. He was the person out of all of these guys that I'm talking about today that was probably the most popular. He was the movement in the public. He proved that a self-made English composer could reach international acclaim. And he did this by his pieces that we know very well, the Enigma Variations, Sea Pictures, which is a beautiful work for mezzo-soprano. And he basically put England back on the musical map. Now, by the early 20th century, composers like Holst and Vaughan Williams that I mentioned would build on this renaissance, using these folk songs, creating new harmonic languages, and defining what we think of today as English classical music. So, before I get ahead of myself and kind of into next season, I want to kind of summarize what brought all of these composers together and what made things sound distinctly British. So there are three things that stand out. Obviously, we have that influence of folk melodies. We see this in a lot of nationalism in different countries. I mean, how many times in the past couple of episodes have I spoken about folk influence? So we have that. We also have this pastoral sensibility. So the music is evoking landscapes, and you can basically hear the countryside of England, these green hills and misty mornings. Very quintessential England when you think about it. And the biggest thing that when I think of the English musical renaissance is the love of choral music. So England's massive choral tradition fueled all of these works, and even these large-scale works like oratorios and ceremonial pieces. So by the dawn of the 20th century, England basically had caught up to Europe, and it had become a major musical force. So the groundwork laid by the aforementioned composers in this episode helped create generations of composers from Walton and Britain to modern figures today. This English musical renaissance was not a rebirth. It was just a rediscovery of a musical identity that had been waiting centuries to be heard again. So in our next episode, following along with this trend of nationalism that we've been talking about, I want to talk about nationalism in the late 19th century in American music. We have people like Amy Beach and John Philip Sousa that kind of are taking us into the 20th century. And then we will finish with a short episode with a transition into the new century. And then we'll be to season 6. Can you believe it? I can't believe it. Anyway, I hope that you are enjoying this season thus far. There are several different ways in the episode notes for you to get more out of these episodes. There is an opportunity to donate if you feel so inclined. I do these episodes for free because I love them. Even if you just have loose change, would love that. If you don't, please take a look at the pieces that I've also linked and spoken about in the episodes, because it's also important for you to be listening to this music as you are studying along or learning about music history for the first time. Please join me next time on Between the Bar Lines.